You're listening to The Local Maximum, episode 252.
Time to expand your perspective. Welcome to The Local Maximum. Now, here's your host, Max Sklar.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. You have reached another Local Maximum. And as you might be aware, Aaron, this is not a slow news week, is it? There is so many things to discuss in the news, and you know what's great? We're going to ignore all of it because it is, I just, from the election to crypto to, I don't even want to mention it to Ukraine. I don't even want to mention it. Get it out of here. We are going to zoom out and head into story
there's
time
today.
There's
a lot of deja vu that we're not even going to touch.
Okay. Okay. Perfect. So I want to harken back to a particular episode that we did, and those were the episodes on 9/11. And we went back and sort of walked through our particular days on 9/11. And it was an interesting exercise because it was combining recollection with some research. And I thought it was a great exercise to go back. And I feel like it's a resource for historians. I could be very not hubristic, but I could be having too high of a sense of self importance here, like that historians would really care in the future. But I, at least for me, for my own history and to try to interpret events, I found it very useful. And I think that going back into past events and talking about our interpretation as people who live through them and just to tell these stories, it's really, I think stories can be very entertaining for the listeners of The Local Maximum. And I feel like they can really be add color to the times we live through in the future. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly personally found that a valuable experience to recollect on that and reflect. And maybe this won't be, you know, the authoritative memoir, but I think it fits right. Very much in that genre of you know, people writing memoirs of their lived experiences. Except you're doing this in an audio format,
right? And it doesn't take us nearly as long.
and that's not unprecedented itself either, that a lot of valuable, you know, kind of documentary work has been based off of audio recordings, you know, stuff in the Library of Congress going way back.
Sure.
And whatnot. So,
sure.
I don't think you're off base at all there.
Okay. So we're going to talk about Hurricane Sandy now. It's been 10 years. Hurricane Sandy will not be as interesting to historians as 9/11 or COVID. It'll be obscure relatively soon, you know, just as obscure as whatever hurricane just hit Florida that was handled well, and there was another one a few weeks ago. Nobody remembers those, although this one's going to be a little bit more memorable just because it was New York, and it's kind of a rare thing. But I think it's... You know, there are definitely stories of storms, you know, like the 1888 snowstorm, and there was a hurricane in New York in 1903. I think it's important to understand the dynamics of New York City in the early 20th century.
I know growing up in Connecticut, it seemed like there was a hurricane hit pretty much once a generation, or at least the one there was one in the 30s and one in the 50s that I remember hearing people talk about. Ones after that, I'm not as familiar with, but... Right. So it's a significant event when a New England state gets hit hard by one of those.
Right. Right.
Whereas Florida expects to get, you know, mid-range hurricanes, if not every season, then every couple of years, and a big one certainly more frequently than New York is.
Right. Right. So let's talk about just New York itself in 2012. This was 2010's New York, which was really New York City, I think. At its most recent height in recent memory, we had just gotten past the Great Recession. The New York tech scene was booming. So for my industry personally, but all the businesses were coming back. New York was seen as a very successful city. I just felt like it was a great time to be there. All throughout the 2010s, but 2012 was right in that and kind of right at the beginning of that. I mean, I guess you could say when I moved in 2006, it was right at the beginning of that. People lost their minds in 2008 due to, right. to that whole situation. There. Right, right, right. But still. So there's a little bit of background in terms of kind of disaster management in New York. I mean, I hearken back. I didn't put this one in because it was so long before, but there was the blackout in 2003, which was for a few days. We don't have to go into that one. Maybe that'll be a whole, maybe not an episode, but maybe a piece of an episode. But leading up to this, there had been a few disasters that New York City had dealt with in the past. And the city government, particularly the mayor, Michael Bloomberg, had received mixed feedback signals. So, for example, we had this enormous snowstorm.
Bloomberg had been mayor since when was his first term in office?
He was elected right after 9/11. So he had been mayor since 2002.
Okay.
So we had the snowstorm in 2010 that was just this this crazy snowstorm. Things were like shut down for 3-4 days. And Bloomberg got a lot of criticism for that. It was like you weren't prepared enough. Now, I don't know if that's true, but it was 3 days of delays, and that was kind of the narrative. I put in here the 2010 Brooklyn tornado. That didn't really affect. There was no narrative around that at all. It was something that happened and left, but it was particularly memorable to me as a disaster that happened at the time because it was just this. I was in class. I was learning. I was taking machine learning with Jan LeCun, I think, and there was just this monster storm that came through, and then I later found out that it was because a tornado had ripped through Brooklyn, and I was actually in Brooklyn the next day, and it was kind of memorable to see a car and there parked in front of a church, and the cross on top of the church had been blown off and had stuck through the windshield of the car.
Oh,
so
wow.
I think I would be a little
apocalyptic
out,
looking.
A little apocalyptic if I were that car, but yeah, things were blown out then, but that was over and done in a few minutes. I don't think anyone died.
And tornadoes tend to be highly localized in their area
it wasn't,
of impact.
Yeah, it wasn't a Wizard of Oz tornado. So coming back to that's just added for me because I that's very memorable. I don't think that's really part of the story. The next one, Hurricane Irene, is definitely part of the story because that happened in September 2011, I think, somewhere around there. And they were like, okay, we're not going to have the snowstorm situation. We're going to be really prepared. This hurricane is coming to hit us. We're going to do X, Y, and Z. Everybody, you know, hunker down, stay in your homes or evacuate if you're over here, blah, 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 blah. I went to my grandparents. I slept over at my grandparents who were on 22nd and Park. I was in the East Village at the time. And so I slept over in their extra room and nothing happened. There was a little bit of wind. That's it. So In 2010 snowstorm, they were blamed for not enough prep. In the 2011 hurricane, they were blamed for too much prep.
I remember a little bit about Irene because it hit part of Vermont that I spent a lot of time in quite hard.
Right.
And maybe in a different way than even if the equivalent storm had hit parts of New York because it took out, you know, 100-year-old bridges and stretches of two lane highway. When I say two lane, I mean one lane in each direction. And when it takes out
a super highway,
a chunk of that road, it means that part of the state becomes inaccessible until they rebuild the road, which in some cases took, you know, the better part of a year to get around to it. So it had a population wise, it was a much smaller, you know, number of people that were impacted, but there was definitely some groups that were isolated pretty severely as a result of it in a way that you don't anticipate seeing in that part of the country.
It's difficult to isolate someone in New York City by blocking off a road, unless it's literally like one tree is down on one side of your road and another tree is down on another side of your particular road, and then you're just blocked in. But
to get something equivalent, you would have to have like a 9/11 level event where all the bridges
are blown
and all the tunnels are closed for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's hope that doesn't happen. So I was having a good year in 2012. Those were good times. May 2011, I started working at Foursquare. January of 2012, I had done a month in San Francisco to work for Foursquare, and then we had moved into our office in Soho on Broadway and Prince Broadway between Prince and Houston.
And that's where you did the majority of your tenure? Or did they relocate again a few years later?
They relocated again in 2018, so they were there for 6 years. So I usually think the main part of Foursquare was taking place there. And just so you know, the layout of New York. So there's Houston Street is almost like Zero Street. And if you go south of Houston, that's the downtown area, which is kind of like old New York. And the north of Houston starts the streets. And this will be important. Each 20 streets is a north of Houston, basically, is First Street. And then 20 streets is a mile. So just so you get a sense of the distances here. I was on 11th Street. My office was on Zero Street. or negative one.
About half a mile from the office.
I had to walk over a little bit. So it was probably a mile. All right. So I had worked at Foursquare for a year now. I was really getting going in my job. I had done a lot of work at that time on something called trending, which is trying to figure out where people were, track anomalous events that were happening across the Foursquare network, where people were telling us where they were in certain places. So certain events that were more popular than maybe they should be at the time. I had just gotten back from a trip to Six Flags a couple days before Sandy with some friends, so that was a lot of fun. And I had just been working on venue ratings at the time. So I'd built all that in a very short period of time, which is pretty cool. I don't think I'll ever
jumped in with both feet.
I don't think I'll ever get like, I don't think I can, have that kind of an impact so quickly at a company today, unless I really join a new startup, which would be a lot of work, or start a startup, you know, maybe, have a lot of, you know, impact on the podcast. All right. So we get lots of news that Hurricane Sandy was about to hit. It actually technically was a tropical storm. So if you say Hurricane Sandy, you're not technically correct.
It was a hurricane, but by the time it hit New York, it had burned off some of that energy.
Yeah, so it wasn't the hurricane force winds that you often get in New York, but it was the storm surge that really got us, the flooding. So let me just take you through my day starting from Sunday all the way till Friday. And hopefully we can get through this very quickly. I'm going to try to make this into a narrative. So Sunday I go downtown. And remember, this is Halloween time. This is pumpkin spice latte week. Yeah. So I go downtown.
If this is the weekend before Halloween, everybody's going to be going to their costume parties.
Right, right. So Sunday I go down to downtown to Darren's. My cousin Darren's which was near Battery Park at the time, near the World Trade Center. So that's another, I don't know, mile and a half south of Houston. It's really at the bottom tip. We did some pumpkin carving there. You know, I believe his pumpkin was carved in a very X-rated picture from the pumpkin carving. So I had a good time with that. And then, as I often did on Sunday, I stopped by at Foursquare headquarters on the way home because, remember, he was at negative 15, so to speak. The office was at negative 1, and I was at 11. So I stopped by the office.
It was on the way.
Right, and I often used to do that, actually, in New York, which sounds so foreign today, but I liked it. I would be out and about on Sunday all day, and I'd stop by at the office on Sunday, and I'd do a few tasks in the office, and that way I would be ahead of the game for the week. And that was always really nice. So I went to Foursquare HQ, and Foursquare HQ had a trending board at the time. It was a large TV that was set up in the office, and it essentially displayed the results of my trending algorithm. And as I was walking out, I saw one of the venues that was unusually trending was called Frankenstorm 2012. Came up with 68 people had checked in. Now, you're usually supposed to check into a place, but people decided to make up this made-up place called Frankenstorm 2012. And we often forget.
No affiliation with Al Franken.
No. We often forget that it was not called Hurricane Sandy, really, until after it hit. It was really called the Frankenstorm. That's what everyone was talking about because it was a Halloween storm, and that was what the media called it. And it's sort of like, has it been buried by Wikipedia? Like, let me look this up. If I look at Hurricane Sandy on Wikipedia, do they even say, yes. So they do say it was mentioned as the Frankenstorm. So, it's not at the top, it's not like Hurricane Sandy or unofficially referred to as Superstorm Sandy, but doesn't say, comma, unofficially also referred to as the Frankenstorm. But that was basically what people were calling it at the time. So that was interesting. So I was getting hit with it from my own algorithm. So that night, the wind starts to pick up. This is Sunday night already, and it's not going to come till Monday night. I go to Stuyvesant Cove Park. Now, for those of you who don't know the layout of New York, Stuyvesant Town is between 14th Street and 23rd Street, and it's on the east side. And so I used to live in there. There are parks in there, and then there are parks on the side of it where you could kind of hang out by the East River, and across the East River you can see, is it Williamsburg or Long Island City on the other side? I mean, you can see both, but you could see into Brooklyn and Queens on the other side of the East River. And so, you know, that was kind of an interesting place to go at the time. I used to walk there all the time, basically because I lived in Stuyvesant Town in 08, and so I kind of got used to walking by that park. I think you've been there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it was also a good place to go see the water. And then I went to, yeah.
Well, when you were there and you had the view of the water, was there anything obvious that like, oh, this is going to be the big one, or, you know, things are getting out of hand, or it just looked like, you know, a mildly stormy day on the water?
It wasn't that warm. It wasn't that stormy, but the water was coming up. There was a little bit of water. It was very like wet in the areas like nearby. And so, yeah, it wasn't. But compared to Tuesday, it was very different. And by the way, I have so many pictures of these, and I think I'm going to put these all in a public album, and I'm going to post it on the show notes page, localmaxradio.com/252. And by the way, this is very exciting. I don't want to – one of the things that worries me about doing this is there's going to be some fun things, some good things, but I don't want to minimize how horrible this was for some people. So let's move on. So Monday I get up. Monday also perfectly fine. They canceled work. It wasn't like everyone worked from home. It was just like, don't come in.
That wasn't so much a thing back then.
Yeah. So you could work from home, but people didn't do it.
Yeah. Well, and similarly, you know, there was a reason that you stopped into the office on Sunday because
to get my laptop.
In theory, have done some of this stuff remotely, but
yeah,
that wasn't part of the paradigm back then.
Right. I think I also was there to pick up my laptop, which was very important. Some people probably didn't have it through the whole thing. Mm. So Monday I went to Veselka. Veselka is a Ukrainian diner in the East Village. And they're open 24 hours. And so I used to go there overnight and do my grad school homework. When I was in grad school, I would be there at like 3 a.m. with some chocolate milk, getting some code done.
Whenever I get a craving for borscht, that's actually the place that pops into my mind.
Yeah. Oh, really? Really? So you've been there. Well, you've probably been there with me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they stayed open as long as possible. It was a wet, rainy day. And I want to emphasize these stories of like how much people worked at the time. And I don't know.
Well, so what do you know what it was that finally triggered? Okay. That we got to close down and they kicked people out
I think they gave a time
order, or?
No, it wasn't. I think they gave a time like 8-9 o'clock. Cause it wasn't in the flood zone. Now the flood zone was now east to west. There are flood zones by the water. So, I was on First Avenue, but over in the East Village, First Avenue isn't by the water because then you have A, B, C, and D, and then the FDR Drive. So I think if you were near Avenue D, it was a problem. But first, between First and A, was not in the flood zone. My cousin Darren, on the other hand, was in the flood zone, but he stayed because he was on like a higher floor and figured, why not? So Monday night came, the storm surge came, and apparently it was washing over parts of the East Village. And again, I think it went up to Avenue C. So FDR Drive, Avenue D, Avenue C. It might have just been basements and first floors, but still, you're checking Twitter. Twitter was actually a place where you went to check news, not to get upset. I mean, this is a form of doom scrolling, but it's also like... not the same flavor of doom scrolling that we do today. People were posting pics and videos of what was going on. And this whole Twitter thing, this whole thing of like, you know, looking at these things in real time, this was a new thing. So kind of thing. So I was watching the TV in my apartment. Remember, I had a one room apartment in the East Village, tiny apartment. And so there's one little TV there that was like, what was it? A 19 inch maybe. And it was kind of on the wall. So I was watching the TV through the night, which I could see from my bed. They were doing it. I looked outside. It didn't really look like it was storming that hard or a little bit of wind. But then they say, well, now we're going to cut to Midtown where a crane has fallen off the top of a super tall building under construction. And basically they had the building there and the crane was on top finishing it off. And it basically went, it was vertical and it went horizontal. And it's literally like dangling in front of the street. So they keep talking about this crane and it's just dangling off the edge. And so that started looking kind of scary because that's off what, the 80th floor. I don't know how 50th floor, how tall this building was, but this is a big Midtown building. And just as they were saying, you know, the crane, then I heard a loud boom and saw a giant flash of green light outside. It looked like green lightning. And then all the power went out. And then my cell phone signal went out. So there's actually a YouTube video of this that's not mine. I don't know if we should play this. It's 1 minute and 26. So I don't know if we could put it in. But I'll link to it here. And it's it actually looks kind of scary seeing that thing explode. Like, I don't think it really exploded, but I don't know why it was so bright.
Was it a lightning strike or was it like a transformer exploding or something? Or
yeah, because it was by the water, so I don't know what happened.
Well, yeah, when you mentioned basements flooding, I was wondering, you know, how much of the utilities and electrical is subterranean, and I'm sure it can withstand a certain amount of you know, flooding. It's got sufficient drainage, but at some point you would imagine that's going to start causing shorts. And I don't know if that's the exact mechanism at play here, but something took down the power grid.
Right. So Tuesday morning, I get up, and for some reason, I don't remember, I guess there was no power on, and there was nothing to do, and you don't want to use your phone power, and the phone can't go online anyway.
Well, you say at that point,
you go to sleep.
Was there no cell signal at all? Like you couldn't call out to tell anyone anything, or had that come? That came back up quickly on backup.
No, do you remember? No. It didn't. Okay, didn't so come was, back until the next
it was,
day.
It was complete, you know, communications and power blackout at that point.
Actually, you know what? That sounds kind of nice now that I think about it. So Tuesday morning, I get up. The storm was over. The sun was out. No power. So I have no idea what's going on. No idea what's going on. Just imagine that. Like, when was the last time you had that situation where you literally had no idea what was going on? And no way of knowing unless you like asked a physical person what was going on. So I go downstairs. I go down my dark stairway, which again, I was in one of those tenement buildings, East Village. You know, it was built in 1890.
Like fourth floor?
No. First floor. Second floor.
Second floor. Okay.
Which was kind of ideal, actually. So I go downstairs this dark stairway, exit the building, and then I look around. I see people walking around. I try to figure out what's going on. You know, who do I ask? I walk around the neighborhood a few times, lots of down branches, and you'll see some of the pictures if you go onto the website. Someone had set up a battery-powered radio on a car, and so that's the technology that got us through this. So we were listening to that, and it was Bloomberg giving updates. Why don't I play this, and we'll clip it in, and then we'll talk about it, because this is 42 seconds, all right? All right, let's go. Look at the reaction. There is extensive flooding in all under river subway tunnels. You see the Con Ed trucks in the back. Trains are typically stored, also flooded, and I think that shows the wisdom of Joe Loda in moving trains out of there to higher ground.
I don't think there was any damage done to the toilets.
Okay, so you see, first of all, that you see New Yorkers at the time, it's just like, man, people were so much chiller back then. That's all I could say. You know, and people were kind of gathering around the radio. It was kind of cool. And so, yeah, so there was Bloomberg. He was giving us updates on Con Ed. He was giving us updates on the subway system. Interestingly, he mentioned Joe Loda, who was the head of the MTA, who ended up running for mayor in 2013, just the next year. And then he said power will be off for a few days. And people are like, oh, my God. So, you know, it's kind of like you... Have you ever seen a zombie movie and then you don't know what's going on and then someone says, I hear they have ammunition in this other town and they're gathering to fight back. You better make it up there, you know, something like that. So it's kind of like that where there's a rumor they have power uptown. You better go up there, you know. So I was thinking about, so I started to make my way uptown. So
now, did you have a particular destination in mind, like a person or place you were going, or just going to see what was up?
Well, first, my first line was to inspect the neighborhood. Then I was going to visit my grandparents and see how they were doing. So I walked east first to the river because I had to see this. And then as I went to the river, my cell signal came back. So I saw the FDR Drive flooded out, the entire that highway, which is a very harrowing highway to drive on. I don't know if you ever drive on it. It's white knuckle the whole time. That's why even though driving from New York to Connecticut was 1 hour, and driving here to Connecticut is 3 hours where my family is, it was a much more exhausting 1 hour. excuse me. So then I saw cars spewed in a variety of different angles, water damage. It's like the water had picked up the cars and they had crashed into each other. So I got up to Stuyvesant Town, back to Stuyvesant Cove Park, and I have this great picture, and there was a rainbow going from the water into the buildings, almost leaping into the buildings in Midtown. So that was a cool part of that. So next I was like, all right, my grandparents, my grandfather was getting very old at that time. You know, he was he passed away, I think, a little over a year later. So I better go check on them. They're in 22nd and Park. So I was already in the around 20th Street or 18th and Stuyvesant Cove, but I just had to walk all the way into Park Avenue. And I had my work computer with me too, because I also heard that some people were working at a hotel in Midtown. People were just going in there to work, so that was pretty cool. So
like they'd gotten some rooms, or they were just like camped out in the lobby.
Yeah. So I'll get to that in a bit. So power was out still at my grandparents, 22nd and Park. So I walked up to their.
So how had you gotten that rumor about work? Was that after that dropped in when you got phone signal over by the FDR?
Right. I was able to check my email. Yeah. So, I walked up, 20 flights of stairs to get to my grandparents, and in the dark too. I have video of that. You know, nothing says disaster and taking a good video as you're doing it.
The closest experience I have to that was when I was in Hawaii for an earthquake and the whole island lost power, and I wasn't in the hotel when it happened. But when I came back at the end of the day, one of our coworkers, he had a bathtub full of ice and beer, but it was up on like the 14th floor, and the wait for the, they had one elevator operating on emergency, you know, generator power or whatever. But the wait to actually get into that elevator was going to be like 90 minutes. And so like, screw it. We're going to walk up the 14 or, you know, flights in the Hilton or whatever to get up there. Cause there's a cold beer waiting for us. But, that's a little bit different in Hawaii than in, you know, October or November in New York City.
Yeah. That's kind of like, this is an aside, but in May I was at a wedding in Brooklyn and we stayed at the hotel, and sometimes the elevators like either were not working or like too crowded because there are too many people getting in. And so I had to take the stairs twice, but the first time I was in a bathing suit and the second time I was in like a tuxedo and nice shoes. And it was like these, I'm never in ideal stair climbing clothes when I'm
on
climbing
average,
the stairs.
However.
Yeah. So in this case, it was you know, my shoes were comfortable, but I had my backpack with all my stuff in it. So I was sore, but I was happy to do it. And it was good to see that my grandparents had other visitors. You know, my uncle was there.
Had you come up there with the intent of like, I'm going to crash with them for a couple of days? Or
no,
or
it was like just to see in? See okay, if so there was anything they needed.
You didn't have like all your belongings on your back.
No. I was just trying to see if they had anything needed. I was quite comfortable in the East Village, to be honest.
Yeah.
The problem they were having that I didn't have, we both didn't have power, their water didn't work. Because I guess the water pump, you need the water pump to get it up that high or something. So, and for some reason, my second floor apartment, the water worked. I don't know how water works in the city. It just magically appears. So,
yeah, I don't know who has water towers and who has water pumps and all that. Well, so now, were any of the businesses in your neighborhood open?
Well, so we'll get to that in a little bit. Okay. Yes.
Cause I was going to say, I guess, and with the power out, I can't imagine you had a very thoroughly stocked, kitchen. And even if you did, anything in the fridge is got a pretty short, half-life on it when the power goes out.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was still inspecting what was going on. No, I was, single in the East Village. My kitchen had nothing. All right, so I walked back down.
You got to your grandparents.
Yeah, yeah. So then that work email said people were working in a hotel in Midtown. So I walked over there to 49th Street from 23rd. So remember, 20 streets in a mile. And then as I looked to my left, I saw the crane hanging off of the building. And then I went inside and turned on my laptop.
Now, the way the crane was hanging, was it clear that like it had done all the falling it was going to do? Or was there a concern like it could fall the rest of the way and that could be a problem?
I mean, if I were just looking at it, eyeballing it, I'd be like, yeah, I'm concerned, but I'm sure they blocked off the street. I don't think it actually came crashing down.
So you weren't like walking under it, but you were close enough you could see it.
Yeah, no, they totally blocked off the street. You couldn't even go in there. And we called that the crane building for the next few years. I don't remember. I don't know what it's called now. Let's see.
But presumably they did remove the crane, you know, not too long after the storm.
Crane building, Hurricane Sandy. Let's see if there's any. Right. So it's that funky building with like the curve and the point up top.
Oh.
Yeah. What building is it? I wish I had a name for it. Swaying from the 70th floor on West 57th Street.
That's scary.
So yeah. So I guess I had walked up a little further that day. It was kind of scary. So all right.
You're at the hotel.
Yes, I'm at the hotel and I'm working. It's great. Like you'd think that if there are people working in the lobby at the hotel, like yes, it was crowded, but every seat was taken. But like I got a seat if I waited long enough, and I also went from the floor. But people were working and immediately I found that coworkers were organizing apartments in Brooklyn for those who wanted and were getting temp space in Midtown the next day. And people were also organizing volunteer runs to help with the cleanup, especially in Queens and the Rockaways and Brooklyn, which would be Manhattan Beach and Brighton Beach and stuff. So this all happens spontaneously, almost immediately. And we were obviously told to deal with everything we needed to deal with personally, which, you know, for me meant checking in with my parents and grandparents. So I did a little work from there. I got some food because there was, once you get to the 40th Street, the power is on. So it's like, so it's almost like you have to make your way up there.
Were restaurants and shops up there slammed just because all the demand from south had come up to them?
Yeah. And as I got back to the East Village, I walked back and the halal truck was still out. That was always out. He was out all the time. He was out at 2 a.m. in a snowstorm. He was out there offering to charge my phone for a few minutes. It was kind of a weird time where I was charging the phone during the day and letting it run during the night. Hmm. And then I had gotten an email from Sandy. And then you're like, wait, what is this? No, that turned out to be my neighbor, Sandy, who said St. Dimphna's Bar is open. St. Dimphna Bar. Yeah. Okay. So they were basically doing a candlelight bar.
Huh.
And so
So this was still in the blackout zone.
Yeah, 117 Avenue A in the East Village. And they were serving some food, basically brought down by trucks. And or they brought down a truck and
did the tap still work? Or was this a purely a bottled beverage situation?
Yeah, I think it was a bottled beverage situation. Yeah, so that was pretty cool. And it was just like people hanging out and chatting about what they were up to and like just talking. You could talk to strangers and stuff, which was great. Again, another contrast to today,
in 2012, right?
Right.
So this was well into the smartphone realm.
Right.
When you were talking about, you know, charge your phone during the day and let it run all night. I'm just thinking that I could have gotten away with that back in my flip phone days, but it's been a long time since I've had a phone that could go a whole day without needing a charge.
Right. yeah. I guess so. I guess now that I moved out here in New Hampshire, I forgot because I'm either at home or my phone is charging in the car, which makes things a lot easier. In New York, you're always worried about that. I was always running out of charge by the end of the day in New York. All right. So October 31st, Halloween day, although it wasn't much of a Halloween, I go outside and they've already set up a makeshift cell tower in the building next door. And you see the line going down to a machine on the ground. And there's literally someone in a vehicle there watching it all day. So they were up with that fast. And there are Con Ed crews everywhere. Bloomberg announced that all buses would be free because people need to get around. So economics did its work. And people started swarming the buses. Free ride. Woohoo. So I tried to get a ride uptown to where I was going to work. But it turned out I would have to knock out some senior citizens in Canes in order to do that. And I was not willing to do that. So I walked once again with my backpack up to the 20s to my grandparents, 20 flights up in the dark, brought some groceries up, 20 flights down in the dark. Then I walked to the 50s to the Time Life building, which is where our makeshift office was, also near the Crane building for a temp workspace. And we actually got a lot of work done. You know, Dennis Crowley, who's been on this podcast, was there. There were maybe 15 people in the room. And everyone was sharing what they were doing, which is like stuff, because it was people from different kind of areas of the company. It was like a 100-person company. So it was kind of a random cross-section of 15 people who happened to also live in Manhattan and were able to get there. And so you kind of learn stuff you normally didn't see. And there was a little costume party. You know, some people are really into their costumes, which, as I said before, I am just not really. there were some costumes and a birthday cake. That was a very productive time. I got dinner with a friend in Times Square later. And then after it was late, I walked back through, quote, dark New York, as we started to call it.
Now, like
dark 40th Street.
This has been, what, two days now at this point?
Yep.
With no power in at least that zone. Were there concerns about like looting or unrest or anything like that?
No reports of looting whatsoever. I could be overstating it, but this is really how it felt living through it.
Yeah.
Everyone was helping each other out. Like people were driving down there. You know, cabs were going down there. Some cabs weren't willing to, but most were. There were no problems with the lack of street lights. There were some people directing traffic in some areas. It was time everyone was helping each other out. So now as this was going on, we were kind of getting worried about my grandparents because there's no water up there. And I could bring water up. I could bring bottled water to drink. But, you know, the bathrooms were getting to be an issue. So we started scrambling to find them a hotel.
And they weren't about to come up and down the 20 flights of stairs.
No, my grandfather couldn't. Yeah. My grandfather couldn't.
And I assume, were the elevators running?
Walk. No, no power.
Okay, so they were also in the blackout zone.
Yeah.
Sounded like they were pretty close to the line though, right?
22nd Street to 40th Street, it's still almost a mile. 40th.
No, okay, yeah. That's a ways, never mind.
Yeah. So and my grandfather couldn't really walk at that time. So, So we were trying to find them apartments. I found one in Park Slope, but I wasn't fast enough. It was taken. My family was like on my case about it. I went to a few places on foot that they directed me to do, and that didn't work. So that was very stressful because you'd almost like go to a hotel and everyone's like imagine like a stock exchange from the 80s where everyone's like, pick me. And they're like, yeah, no, I'm sorry. There is no, or a bank run maybe, which today might hit home. Like, I'm sorry. There are no rooms left. And a lot of the rooms also were taken up by people that in for the marathon. So
was the marathon supposed to happen that, was it during the week or was it that previous weekend?
No,
or?
It always takes on the weekend after Halloween.
Okay, so they were in town early for the marathon, or leading up to it.
Yeah, and some of them like shared their apartments.
And at this point, had the marathon been canceled, or were they planning to go ahead with it?
No, it hadn't been canceled yet. It eventually gets canceled, but that is a spoiler, Aaron. So finally we got them a hotel in Danbury, Connecticut, and the paramedics came, and they carried my grandfather down on a chair 20 flights of stairs. To get them out. So
that's a workout.
That was pretty incredible. Yeah. So I'm working uptown. This day repeats a couple more times. We're getting to the end of my personal experience, and then we're going to kind of zoom out a little bit. And because this almost sounds kind of fun as I'm talking, as I'm remembering it, but you have to remember for other people, it really wasn't fun. But this part's going to be a little fun. Okay. So you're ready. Finally, Friday night, the end of the week, it's been 1 week of this, I head out, I start walking home with a group of coworkers, a flock of four squares, and we're heading into the dark zone. So we head into the dark zone to go home, and fortunately, that was so easy. I'd walked it, I knew these streets like the, with my eyes closed, literally. I didn't have to see anything, because I knew where everything was. I'd been walking these streets for so long. And somewhere in the low 30s, maybe like 33rd Street or something, all of a sudden I hear a big, it's the opposite of the big boom. I heard a big click, and then a giant light came on. And that light, and I turned around, and that light read Dunkin' Donuts. And all of a sudden, all of the other lights, one by one on the street, started to come on, first one side and the other side. And then you started hearing cheers from the bars and the windows. And then someone blasted out of their window that song, Snap, I Got the Power. Yeah, I don't know how to do it. Dun, 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 I got the power. You know that? And then the entire walk home was just purely elated, you know, and so everyone was just, you know, hopscotching down the streets like, woohoo. Dark situation, I guess, but bright light. And as I was walking home in the East Village, I immediately saw business owners coming in to sweep up and set up chairs. And some of them were ready to go in like 30 minutes.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, they were like already opening up. They're like, all right, chairs. Got a few things. So that was an exciting end to the power outage for us in Manhattan. But it definitely wasn't over. They always, you know, catered to Manhattan first. And for many people, their inconvenience was worse. And for still others, lives were devastated. So, for example, my parents were without power in 2 weeks. You know, Weston, a friend of mine on Long Island who's been on the show, his whole basement flooded, lots of damage. And gas temporarily hit $5 a gallon in the city, which back then was unheard of. Now that doesn't sound that bad. And parts of Brooklyn and Queens and the Jersey Shore were just devastated. And I looked this up, and it's pretty incredible. Wikipedia has 233 casualties, including 149 deaths in the United States, including 49 in New York State, which had the most, which I assume was mostly due to flooding. But, you know, that sounds like a lot of people who should have gotten evacuated but didn't.
Well, because you know, one of the things you hear about, especially down south in hurricanes, is people in neighborhoods where there's a lot of flooding, and they'll retreat to the second floor when the first floor gets flooded out, and then they'll go up to their attic or up onto the roof, and then they need to be rescued off the roof. And I guess it's a little bit different in New York, where you've got a lot of buildings that have a lot more than two floors. But that's got to be a pretty terrifying moment when the streets are flooded, and so you can only go up now.
Right. And I don't think...
I'm sure that happened in some neighborhoods, but...
In Manhattan, you know, nobody experienced that. It was just your... Maybe your first floor was flooded a couple feet.
Yeah.
But I assume maybe in Rockaway Beach or something that was happening, or in Brighton Beach, maybe. I don't know. And certainly the Jersey Shore. I mean, I went to the Jersey Shore in 2015, and they were like, this used to be so nice. This ride and this stuff is all washed away from Hurricane Sandy. So it was definitely seen... years later. But as for my life, and I don't want to make this all about me, but let's make this more about me. My life went on pretty quickly because I'm going through my Foursquare check-ins here to look at history. I was enjoying nightlife and events again immediately. My friend Nick passed the bar. We did a party for that. And then the election of 2012 came and went without incident. And they counted all the votes pretty that night. So I don't remember if it was that night or the day after, but something like that. And but so
it was unremarkable.
Yes, yes. Although I think that election is interesting and important politically, but that's a whole other topic to get into. But all of this happened very quickly. Some other related things that I did later on, I kind of manned a donation booth at the Sandy fundraiser in December what's north of 14th Street? It was kind of like, you know, in the Gramercy neighborhood, sort of near Stuyvesant Town, but not in Stuyvesant Town. Irving Place. People know Irving Place. And it was a concert by the Spin Doctors. I don't know if you know their music at all.
I'm vaguely familiar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The next year I went, my cousins and my friends work at the court. So I kind of was visiting the small claims night court when they were there just to hang out. And there was a guy trying to sue for $5,000, the, Stuyvesant Town garage, because his car got ruined. It was a real beat up car,
I imagine it did not go his way.
No, because they're like, you can't really sue for that kind of thing. And this is an interesting fact. According to Wikipedia, a baby boom was reported in New Jersey 9 months later. Now, I don't know if that happened with COVID too. I'm not sure, but that was
there
part
was a lot of speculation that there might be, but I think there was fair amount of speculation that given how long it lasted, it kind of went in the other direction. That there were a lot of people that were like, yeah, if we're going to be stuck together, I don't know if I'm cut out for this.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is where I think looking at this event from 2022 kind of colors how we think of it. Hurricane Sandy was a natural disaster, wrecked lives. New York is not used to this type of storm. But still, we collectively, I'm not saying I, but we collectively handled it very well. Again, no looting. Society was orderly. People helped out each other readily, and we were just pouncing to volunteer and get back to work again when all was said and done. So for me, this set the bar for like disaster management and how you're expected to behave. It was kind of the idea that New Yorkers would come together. And unfortunately, this made me totally unprepared emotionally for what life would be like in New York City during the COVID lockdowns. Followed by the civil unrest.
It certainly
unrest.
Sounds like it had a lot of echoes of the 9/11 experience. Obviously, yeah. the threat is the wrong term, but the impact was much more diffuse here.
Right.
You know, it wasn't isolated to Ground Zero. It was the whole city was impacted, some parts more than others.
I think in 2012, New Yorkers still remembered 9/11.
Yeah,
9/11 was still.
And yeah, people rushed to help.
We still
others
remember
and they were supportive. And yeah, and, you know, it was a communal response in a
right,
way that
right.
did not feel the same more recently.
Yeah, well, I mean, think about it. If you're in the East Village and you're 26 years old, and it's 2012, you remember 9/11. Yeah. But if you're 26 year old today, or during COVID, you don't remember. You don't really, maybe you were alive during 9/11, you remember, but it's not really in your consciousness.
Right.
So
it's not the same type of touch point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so that might have been, that might have been part of the story here. And I think it's also just the social cycles that we're in. And so I would like more analysis for this from like a historical perspective. It's sort of interesting as you get older how you live through these these waves.
And not to say that during COVID people weren't banded together and doing things, but the nature of that was very different. It was, you know, we're going to open our windows and bang on pans at whatever it was, you know, at 5 p.m.
At 7.
Support essential workers.
I'll admit, I did that. But it was just like, what else am I supposed to do?
We're going to, you know, sew our own masks and offer them to people who need them because there was a shortage of masks. And that was people trying to do things to help, but it didn't have the same, I mean, by nature of the isolation that was the kind of the defining characteristic of that, it felt different, even if the impulse was in the same vein.
Right. Right. Oh, I also forgot to mention, like, the mayor had to cancel. They tried to have the marathon after the hurricane, but ultimately they had to cancel it. It was too much cleanup to do in too little time. And so that's also an echo.
Was that, like, the first cancellation of the marathon ever?
Yes, the first of several. So the next cancellation would happen 8 years later in 2020, and even 2021's marathon was like lame. It's back now, actually. So I saw lots of pictures of the marathon the other day, and it was actually really exciting to see those pictures because we hadn't had a real one since 2019, really. It would be canceled again 8 years later in 2020. Note that October 2020 is how many months after the start of COVID? So like there was no way they could plan for that. How many lives did they save by canceling the marathon in 2020? I'm pretty sure zero. I'm pretty sure maybe getting people in shape would have been a good thing.
Keep in mind this was before the vaccine. So I think the vast majority of people probably would not have been comfortable. I know the Boston Marathon was canceled because if the last thing you want to do is, and even though it is an outdoor event, people are packed in there at the start, and if you got 20 or 30,000 people in close proximity, it was everyone's worst nightmare of what they thought a super spreader event would look like with something like that.
Yeah. I mean, they could have at least staggered it or something.
Especially because you got people, flying in internationally, you got, all the African runners coming and folks, coming from Europe and Japan, and it on paper it looked like the worst case scenario would come out of something like that.
I just feel like they didn't even try. I feel like they were just, I don't know.
They have a very strong incentive to do as much CYA as possible.
And of course, COVID led. I mean, so it's very controversial to say COVID led to civil unrest and looting. I've been heavily criticized for saying that at the time. I think it's right, though. I don't think we would have seen that kind of civil unrest if COVID had never happened.
Yeah, well, I think people being locked down certainly seems to have caused a lot of kind of cooped up or bottled up anxiety and anticipation, and it primed us to kind of blow up at something.
Right. I also feel like the media right now, I mean, the media is always heavily criticized, but like is much more into making people hysterical now than it was in 2012. So that is another observation.
I don't want to paint the media of a decade ago with rose-colored glasses.
Yeah, no, I know.
The gut feel, I'm 100% with you on that.
Yeah, no, they weren't like people weren't panicking. People in New York never panicked. People in New York, when there was a storm coming, people would be like, "Great, people were like, "Swarm the liquor store." <Let's>, all right, party at my place. That's always what it was like. I mean, come on, my fellow New Yorkers will understand.
And you said at the beginning that this it technically wasn't a hurricane when it hit anymore. It was a tropical storm. I mean, I remember in Connecticut, a tropical storm was coming, and we thought, well, that's a great excuse. We'll catch the tail end of it. It's the best time to go out sailing on Long Island Sound because you'll never get waves that big or that much wind. And it was probably a real stupid idea to do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, a little thrill seeking, and people would go out and do that. And so a tropical storm, it wasn't nothing, but it wasn't like, you know, the end of the world, at least. But that's not how we thought of it. But it goes to show that, you know, just the right set of circumstances, you know, whether it was the tides and the, you know, the wind and the storm surge just hit the right way, that what might have otherwise just been a, you know, it's another big storm was a big deal for New York City.
Right. Right. And then we had kind of uninterrupted. We had no disasters until COVID. So that was a big, big chunk of
certainly
time.
Certainly nothing on that scale. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a big chunk of time with nothing, and the city just seemingly to keep getting better and better, at least for the first few years after that. So, the South Street Seaport. South Street Seaport was taken out by that, but a new one popped up in its place, a new version of it. It was taken out.
Is it the gambler's fallacy that, you know, we haven't had a win for a while, so we're due for one?
Or we haven't had a lose for a while.
You go long enough without a major disaster and you're due. I know that's not the way it actually works, but
yeah.
You know, because I don't know if Sandy actually counted as like a 100-year storm or not, but you know, that's frequently the terminology they use for some of those types of things.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So, what else is the main takeaway here? I think I gave my initial takeaway. I feel like our listeners might have different takeaways. By the way, you could add whatever your experience was. I don't think you had anything quite so memorable is what you
said.
Yeah,
I mean, I was in Boston at the time, and the impact on us was pretty negligible. I think it literally just was a big storm for us. I don't think we had any major power outages. There were communities around us, you know, up and down the North Shore that were maybe hit a little bit harder, but
right.
Nothing on the scale of what was going on in New York City at the time.
Yeah. So what do you think this is might be? I feel like I might have already answered this, but what is the headline in this story if we're explaining this to people, you know, in the future? What is the do you think my main takeaway is correct? There probably are other takeaways that would also be correct. Is there anything we've missed?
Well, I guess my question would be what can we do as you know, people on the street to make, you know, the next time we find ourselves in a disaster, to make it more like Sandy in how people react to it. And I'm not sure what an individual can do to kind of shift the tone of that or not.
That's an interesting question. I'm going to leave that to the listeners. Let's talk about it on our locals, maximum.locals.com. Thank you so much, everyone, for subscribing. We're not going to do a probability distribution of the week this week, because it's just kind of weird to pair it with this. But I do want to do the Poisson distribution. I want to get to it with you because it's kind of a good one. So maybe we'll do that next time. All right. Any last thoughts before we head out?
No, I think you painted a vivid picture of what it was like to be there.
Okay, I think we've covered it as well. I'm going to try to get the pictures together and put it on localmaxradio.com/252. Have a great week, everyone. That's the show. To support the Local Maximum, sign up for exclusive content and our online community at maximum.locals.com. The Local Maximum is available wherever podcasts are found. If you want to keep up, remember to subscribe on your podcast app. Also, check out the website with show notes and additional materials at localmaxradio.com. If you want to contact me, the host, send an email to localmaxradio@gmail.com. Have a great week.
Feel the power.